is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we are exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we are going to crack them wide open. Hopefully this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or at the very least can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I am so excited to be back in the cockpit doing this thing once again with my good friends, Scott Howland. Hello.
How's it going?
And Kevin. Kevin, I'd normally give you a better... Let's try this again. I'd normally give you a better introduction than that. The Dr. Kevin Burr.
Gentlemen, it's good to be back in the saddle with y'all, or I guess cockpit, as yes, we're kind of using an airplane.
No, it's like a fighter pilot, yeah, like an X-Wing.
That's what I'm looking for, yeah.
All three of us crammed awkwardly into the cockpit of an X-Wing. I guess it would have to be...
Yeah. I would prefer the Falcon, so we'll...
That's right, except for...
A little more
elbow room. Y'all are going to have to sit in Chewbacca's hairy chair, because you know that thing's got a funk to it, right? Well, I'm your host, Jared Mays, and before the show, we were talking about how Kevin's going on a meat and cheese diet, which sounds like one heck of a diet, and how I saw on the internet that he was smoking some pork shoulders. And I was about to tell you guys...
Thank you for specifying specifically what I was smoking, okay?
Yeah, that's right.
The whole thing started off by me saying I don't have any vices other than food.
Well, get this. My vice, the food vice, almost burned my house down. Did I tell you guys about this?
No.
So, one of my best friends, also named Kevin, from Tennessee, which is hilarious.
Wow, there's more than one.
Lives up here in Massachusetts. And so we bond as Southerners. Our kids play, and then we smoke meat. And by that, I mean he smokes the meat and I eat it. So he was telling me about, you know, what I could do to, you know, basically, what's the expression for this? The jury rig? Is it jury? Like a... Jerry rig?
Jerry.
Yeah, or sometimes jerry rig.
My friend Kevin was telling me about a hack that I could use to turn my gas grill into a smoker.
Okay.
And it worked the first two or three times until it didn't. Which is basically this. You put a tray of water or apple juice on the grill, because propane is such a dry heat, you want to get some moisture in there. So you put that next to your meat. Then you put get the temperature at 250, and then you turn it to low. You want to keep it consistently at 250, which is tough to do, but you just got to monitor it. And then you have to put a pan underneath the meat to catch the drippings. You don't put the meat over the fire. You turn on the side burners, leave the middle burner off, and the meat over there. Well, I forgot that step, and I forgot the pan. And wouldn't you know it, I could smell something coming from outside, and I was like, that's not the pleasant smell of a slow-cooking pork shoulder. That's the smell of burning vinyl. And I ran outside, and that fire had gotten up over 900 degrees for sure, and had lit a good 6 or 8 feet across the chasm of my yard over to my house, and was it had pretty well melted 6 or 8 panels of my vinyl siding. And I turned on the garden hose and just doused my house, the grill, and I kid you not, when I hit the meat with the stream of the garden hose, the meat just disintegrated into wet ash. Wouldn't you know that this story wasn't nearly as funny to my wife when I had to tell it to her? So I'm not allowed to smoke meat anymore until I get an actual smoker and put it much farther away from the house.
Yeah. Well, and then
that sounds reasonable.
Cake. It'll be a cinch to do that, and that'll never happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a reason that I talk to people about Star Wars and the Bible and not any kind of cooking solutions. There will be no cooking with hyperspatiology anytime soon, unless Kevin, of course, is leading that particular side episode. But, I'm getting sweaty just thinking about it. Elon, I'm not sweaty thinking about this episode, however, of Hyperspace Theology. And I'm in the cockpit this week. I got the chance to choose the topic, and I could not be more excited. Of course, last episode, we had our good buddy Rick joining us. Kevin was out. Glad to have you back. Glad to finally have the time to sit down and record one of these again. And what's on my mind, of course, is what's on everybody's minds these days. Of course, if you're listening to this years later, congratulations on making it to years later. This is, of course, being recorded in 2021, and we've been in the middle of a global pandemic. And one of the accessories that I never thought I would own 100 of, that I now do, are these little face masks. You guys have, like, a collection of masks? I know, Scott, way back in the beginning of this thing, we were swapping masks, and Jen made us some, and
yeah, I got a big stack. Where I work for a pharmaceutical company, so wearing a mask was no big deal because as a matter of my job, I would wear one pre-pandemic and stuff. And so everybody was raiding the masks at the beginning to try and, you know, we had to have a special stash of them and stuff so that nobody would, so we could still actually do our jobs.
Oh, yeah,
and stuff.
So that whole thing. And we're not going to weigh in on, you know, whether or not masks should be required or the efficacy of masks. Not getting into any of that today. Hey, we are glad that you have survived, whether or not you were wearing a mask to be able to just listen to this episode. What I will say, though, is as a Star Wars fan, there's some pretty cool masks in the Star Wars universe. I got to tell you, some of these guys were making these masks look cool before they were ever popular in the real world. You guys have, like, a favorite helmet or a favorite mask in the Star Wars universe?
Well, I mean, you have to go with the Mandalorians. And then as the lore around the Mandalorians, starting with Boba Fett, and then you saw how you would see a lot of the other ones would have their own bespoke helmets and stuff. So that I thought those were pretty cool.
Yeah. I guess Boba Fett might have the most iconic. I can think of one other, maybe two, that might rival it. Kevin, do you think that Boba Fett's got the coolest one? Or
man, I really like Din Djarin's because clean. It's got that kind of chrome stainless steel look.
It doesn't have the antenna,
no dents.
Doesn't have the antenna. That's fair. I think that perhaps one of the masks that accentuates a character or really, really drives home a character the best would be Darth Revan's.
There you go. That's my.
It's terrifying, and it's supposed to be because he's supposed to be a terrifying character. Right?
Well, and it's based off of, now, not to get nerdy, but the expanded universe
We have never not gotten nerdy.
God forbid I do that. The lore, if I recall correctly, I actually wrote a whole article about Revan for Youtini. I'll link it in the show notes if I remember. The whole lore with it is he conquered the Mandalorians, you know, 4,000 years before the films, and as such modeled his mask after the Mandalorian mask. So the T-visor is a Mandalorian trait, you know, we've got, that's a word that's become part of the cultural vernacular these days. For a long time, that was a word that was only in the pockets of, like, real Star Wars fans. But yeah, the whole thing was he conquered them and then stole their wardrobe and made it look cooler, right? Or at least, you know, Jedi-ify it a little bit. Revan, I agree, would be my favorite. Now, what about Vader? Do you think that Darth Vader has the most iconic mask in all fiction?
I would say that probably fair to say it's such an essential part of his character. You know, you can't, it doesn't seem, when they were talking, when Anakin first took the mantle of Darth Vader, you know, in episode 3, it just didn't seem right, you know, because he didn't have all the accoutrement with the helmet and the whole suit and everything. It just didn't seem, had the same kind of impact as it does when you see him standing in A New Hope for the first time.
Yeah. One of the things about Vader's mask as it relates to his character, of course, is in Revenge of the Sith. When I first saw it in theaters, I was a little bit, like, shocked and disappointed in a way that Palpatine knights him as Darth Vader before he gets the suit. He is Darth Vader just because he's feeling mean and angsty. And for me, you're not Darth Vader until you've got the suit on, right? Which goes to show that there was more to the mask, or maybe in this instance, less to the mask than what I had always believed. That was not what made him Darth Vader in the first place. And as we're thinking about the significance of masks in the Star Wars universe as it relates to Christian spirituality, of course, we're thinking about the fact that these characters in the galaxy far, far away, they're putting on this cloth over their face, not or a metal, in the case of these characters we've talked about, for Vader. Do you think Vader's is like, what, silicon? It's probably not, like, steel.
It's probably a high-quality polymer. Yeah.
I know.
It's code for
Nike,
fancy
Darth
plastic.
Vader, come in here to the wardrobe selection. You can get your hands on some high-quality polymer. Yeah, it wasn't a great impression. Please, I'll fix it.
That sounded an awfully lot like your Massachusetts accent that you occasionally whip out here.
Yeah, I've got like two or three accents. They all sound the same. That's right. The idea, of course, is that in Star Wars, people will wear them to try to pretend to be somebody that they're not, or try to fool the world that they are somebody other than they really are. Think about Leia putting on Bush's or Bausch's outfit. How do you say that bounty hunter from Return of the Jedi? When she infiltrates Jabba's palace, do you say Bush or Bausch?
I'd go with Bausch.
Yeah, I don't guess it matters. They don't say it in the film. This is one of the nerdy expanded universe things. Of course, you can put on a mask in order to protect yourself, as we have in our own society. You think about the stormtroopers wearing helmets so that, well, hey, when they walk through doorways, they don't hit their head too hard. Or, of course, you know, if they're in some sort of a situation where the atmosphere isn't breathable, or they're, you know, gassing their victims, which that sounds awfully violent, so we'll move on from that. And, of course, for us as Christians, we realize that our identity is not entirely wrapped up in simply our hobbies, like smoking meat, for example, or our own sinfulness, but to think about the fact that we can have a new identity in Christ. And one of the big complaints, of course, that people have against Christians, one of the, you know, things that keeps coming up on these studies that people like the Barna Group keeps putting out, is that one of the reasons people have either turned from faith, or one of the reasons that often comes up as an obstacle to people's faith, is the hypocrisy of the Christians that they know. That is that, you know, the entire idea of hypocrisy, of course, is like a stage actor who wears a mask to pretend to be someone that they're not. So first and foremost on this topic, I want to dive into, what do we think on the Star Wars side of things, what are the significance of these key masks? We can talk about these three, four, five major characters, Darth Vader, Boba Fett, so forth and so on, Princess Leia, whatever the case may be. When these Sith Lords, for example, mask up, you know, it's not primarily because there's a, you know, galaxy-wide pandemic, it's for another reason. So let's start with Vader, for example. Why do you, what do you think, maybe for you as a kid watching Star Wars for the first time, what did you think when you first saw that helmet? What kind of feeling does it inspire within the viewer?
Intimidation. You know,
intimidation.
You see him
for
come
sure.
down, it's the whole outfit of him just being jet black, but those, he's got eyes, but they're all black, and they're soulless, you know, like you're not going to get any sympathy from this guy at all, you know. So that's kind of the first blush that I got seeing him in the theater, you know, as a child, you know just how fearsome and uncaring and blank his emotion can be.
Now, you said something there, Scott, I'm going to bicker with, since we're getting in the weeds with the nerdiness tonight. You said that the eyes are all black. There's actually been some debate over this. Have you heard
about this? No, I haven't.
Kevin, you're laughing because you knew I was going to go there.
I'm not surprised you went there.
There is this strain of fan that has said originally the eyes were a slight tint of red. And over the years, there's been a debate between the red eyes and the black eyes, and they brought back the red eyes in recent years. Rogue One in particular, the eyes are like almost neon red. They're very bright red. They're way too red, in my opinion. Kevin, you've heard the debate over the red and black eyes.
Well,
does it matter to you?
I haven't heard of it so much as I'm not surprised that such a debate exists, because whenever I happen to watch one of my favorite Star Wars channels on YouTube, where the host is kind of reviewing, you know, a comic that's, you know, especially, you know, targeting history of like Darth Maul, or, you know, Vader doing this or that, like early Vader doing this or that or whatever. In the comics, it appears that he is often drawn with obviously red eyes. But in the movies, it seems like if there is red in his eyes, there's a hint of red, but they're obviously black. And so I'm not at all surprised, you know, that the comics would draw out and emphasize the red eyes, because they're startling. Like Scott said, they're intimidating.
Sure. You look into red eyes is typically not something you want to see.
Yeah.
So it is villainous. Of course, you get like the red of his crimson blade reflected in those eyes, and it's certainly a terrifying sight. Now, Kevin, is that your belief about Vader's helmet as well? Is that it's just meant to inspire terror? Did you think there was more of a story as to the design of his mask when you were first, you know, getting acquainted with the films?
I did not know about the accident that led to the practical necessity of the mask and the all the apparatus and all that stuff. I wasn't aware of all that. As a child, I would not have been able to verbalize this, but, you know, in the course of our conversation and in the course of reflecting on Star Wars over the years, in addition to an intimidation factor, there is also a degree of dehumanization of the person wearing the mask, and therefore, I suspect it is harder for the audience to connect to this person. Compare, for example, Vader's mask, which stays on in the original trilogy, right until the very last moment.
Yeah, right. When he takes it off, he dies.
And I was surprised that they didn't do that with Kylo Ren.
Oh,
when his mask came off, I suddenly thought, oh, that's a real person with real feelings and a story. And I almost fought my initial inclination to connect with Adam Driver's puppy dog eyes, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's a big difference there between the broken old Vader who has to keep it on in order to survive versus what we learn about Kylo Ren, which is he's basically trying to emulate Vader. So the point of wearing his mask is to be like Vader. He's even got Vader's melted head in his office. People think I've got weird stuff in my office. He's got Vader's melted skull sitting on a pedestal to show that he, or in a litter box, as it always looks like. Go back and watch The Force Awakens. It looks like it's sitting
head,
in a litter
melted
box.
Melted house. Sorry, is that too soon?
There's a theme in this episode for sure. But the point, of course, with Kylo Ren's mask is that he doesn't have to wear it in order to survive as much as he's trying to project an image of someone that he's not.
That's
because he likes Vader. He's a Vader
fanboy. That's kind of the I had the opposite reaction to what Kevin's was once he took it off, you could see him desperately trying to live up to the Vader name, live up to, you know, the what his grandfather had done. You know, he's desperately trying to cling to all these things and trying to recreate it instead of being his own. That's why I liked it in The Last Jedi when he smashes it as a sense of, okay.
Right.
Like, no, you've grown past that. I always saw that as, I don't know. It just didn't sit well with me when he was trying to put it back on in The Rise of Skywalker.
Well, let's explore that. Let's think about it, because it's significant. Okay, so we've explored why he has the mask, which is Kylo Ren wears it to be like Vader, even though it's not necessarily utilitarian. It is iconic. He destroys it for what reason? Do you remember?
I remember that Snoke had told him he has to get rid of that mask, And
right. Let's see if we can get Kevin to do his smoking.
I tried it for the first time in the pre-show.
Take off that ridiculous mask.
Right. Does he call it ridiculous or stupid?
Ridiculous would suit him better than stupid. Stupid's not really a word you're throwing around a lot in Star Wars. They're more grandiose than that.
Is that right?
Take off that silly mask, you little boy.
No, sorry.
Snoke, his mentor, is basically talking down to him and saying, you're playing Vader. You're a little boy playing dress up. As opposed to somebody who actually is going to be as villainous as Vader. And so then he goes and smashes the mask. Well, now you criticized him putting the mask back together. I like it as a symbolic move. For this reason, he has broken free of his mentor. And he says, actually, I'm going to be the person that I want to be. I'm not afraid of what you think. Of course, spoilers for The Last Jedi. He cuts Snoke right in half. He Darth Mauls him and kind of blindsides him at the same time. And the point in that, of course, is, well, he's moved on from his mentor, and so he puts the mask back together. Of course, it's also kind of symbolic in the sense that J.J. Abrams is going to be making the third movie in the trilogy after somebody else kind of did a very different idea with the second movie in the trilogy. So he's like, let me put the pieces of my film back together.
Somebody else smashed the mask, so J.J. needed to put it back together again.
That's the symbolism I saw in the mask. In all honesty, I saw that, and I'm like, Abrams was upset at the path they went down, and he's rebuilding it literally on the screen there, so...
Well, there's that real-world element to it, and that's one of the things I like about Vader's mask as well. There's this real-world history that the legend has it. You know, I'm not 100% sure if I'm right on this. The legend is that originally Vader's mask was inspired by the look of real-world, of the Sith of old, the Sith species. And so it's styled after that. Timothy Zahn, the author who... eventually wrote the Thrawn trilogy, the first like real concrete expansions of the original films. He was going to create those characters. He wanted Vader's henchmen to be the Sith, so they were going to look like his mask. And then Lucasfilm said, "No, that's not the direction we're going with this." And so he had to rename them and give them a different design. But they've got a big, massive underbite, sharp teeth, the Nogri. It's a whole rabbit hole. But in the same sense, Kylo Ren's rebuilt mask carries a significance. Obviously, there's the real world history of it all, but then in the films it doesn't look like it once did. It shows that he's been through some stuff. He has rebuilt himself, however, and it's got the red cracks, and the legend has it that it's inspired by this Japanese tradition of fixing broken pottery. There's a name for it.
And they accentuate the cracks with gold and stuff. I've seen these things. Yes.
And so the point there is it's actually more unique if it has been put back together. You don't try to hide its flaws, but that gives it character. And in the same way, we bridge the gap to Christian spirituality, and we think about the fact that our weaknesses are a part of who we are. We're made perfect in weakness through Christ. Not that we exaggerate our weaknesses so as to brag the world about everything that we're doing wrong in the name of God. That's not quite the point. As much as to say that we get a new identity in Christ, and our weaknesses are still there, but they're given different meaning, and we have a different perspective on all of it. So we think about the significance of masks in the Star Wars universe. I think Kylo Ren's might tell the biggest story, don't you think?
That, I would say that, and maybe a little bit of the Mandalorians with the whole, in the first season when, you know, Din is told never take off your mask, that's part of their cultures. Nobody can see your face. Nobody, you know. So that's kind of and then as he struggles with that when he meets like Bo-Katan and they're taking their helmets off and they're obviously Mandalorians. So you know that whole custom, religious customs that they're using in theirs.
That's good stuff. I love that. Nobody can see your face. Yeah. Never take your mask off. And they ask him, have you ever taken your mask off
for
anybody?
Has any human being seen your face?
When you come to church and they said, have you sinned this week? No, that's not actually what happens at church. For our non-Christian listeners.
None of the churches you're not going to get asked that.
No, because we all know the answer. The fact of the matter is that story within The Mandalorian is beautiful and significant, that he eventually has to learn to be vulnerable, even though it violates some of the stricter traditions of his belief system. Eventually, the vulnerability outweighs that. He has to take his mask off before a droid in the first season, so it's a technicality. Doesn't quite count, right? Kevin, you've got something.
Yeah, let me ask a question about that. Din Djarin does take his mask off, yeah, because he is vulnerable, because he's in need of assistance there. Is vulnerability the reason why Kylo Ren first takes off his mask? I can't remember. It happens in The Force Awakens, right? When does he first? When do we first see Kylo Ren take off his mask?
Yeah, it's in the first act of The Force Awakens. In fact, I've got a whole beef about that because I've got an action figure that's based off the trailer in which he's still wearing the helmet in the battle in the snow. But in the film, he's not wearing the helmet in the battle in the snow. So my action figure is non-canonical, which drives me nuts. Yeah, he takes it off pretty early in the film.
Battle in the snow.
In the woods against Rey and Finn.
Yeah, that's at the end. I thought you said the first act.
He takes it off earlier than that. Yeah, airing my dirty laundry here on the show.
Yeah.
It takes it off before Rey to show. That's later in the film. To show her. It's like a gesture of vulnerability in order to try to sway her to his cause, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And continues to take it off, right, in moments like that, or generally speaking. I'm sorry, I've seen other Star Wars things more recently and just can't remember off the top of my head. But it is interesting that he removes the mask under emotionally charged circumstances.
Yeah.
Much like Vader. I mean, those are pretty emotionally charged circumstances. Din Djarin removes his because, well, you know, he'll die if he doesn't. Right. And that's at a pretty emotionally charged scene. I don't know if that's a common thread that was intentional. Those are three different story drivers, right? George Lucas, Filoni Favreau, and Abrams. But it's interesting that theme appears at least to be a common thread.
Right. They're tapping into the significance of this symbolism that's part of the franchise. I mean, Star Wars, out of maybe any fictional universe, has the coolest costumes, right? There's costuming troops across the world, the 501st Legion and the Mando Mercs who build their own armor, and then they go to children's hospitals for, you know, to make kids' days, or they go to parades, and it's a huge part of what makes Star Wars Star Wars. But each and every one of those has a symbolic significance beyond simply looking cool, although there's a lot of that as well. You know, you mentioned.
At the end of the second season, when in the Believer episode, and he has to take his face helmet off because it's the only way to get back to the kid. It's the only way to get back to Grogu, right. and caring for something outside of himself, and it's fundamentally changed him to the point where he's willing to reveal his face. Remember the whole joke about. He put a mask on to be in that transport so that nobody would see him when he changed his armor and stuff. And then, you know, and the whole conversation they had in the transport on the way, and it just how it shows. I think they use that moment to show how much, you know, Grogu had fundamentally changed and how much growth Din Djarin had gone through.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's one of those things where the idea that he has become vulnerable with this other person, with this other being, with Baby Yoda, right? Grogu, still not used to that name, happened with the helmet on, but now he's willing to show this vulnerability that will get him to take the helmet off because he's already reached that level of intimacy with you know, this person who's become significant in his life. Obviously, the most, you know, the clearest example of where we can go with this in the Bible would be Moses' encounter with God on Mount Sinai. Don't you think that that's probably the most obvious initial connection with thinking about being face to face with God?
You certainly gave me a hard time when I mentioned that and before the show. And I was like, oh, yeah, like Moses. You're like, oh, wow, that's, I mean, that's pretty easy.
I was trying to say, I know that one's going to come up in the episode. We're up against the clock here. I got to go to bed. I got to get up early to take my daughter to first grade. But I wanted to get to another example I just was hoping you could help fish for. Anyway, let's start there. Let's start there on Mount Sinai. Obviously, we've got some New Testament texts that talk about how no one has ever seen God. So then what on earth is happening with Moses and God on Mount Sinai? What is it that happens to where when Moses comes down, all the Israelites wish they had sunglasses?
Yeah. He is in God's presence in a way that no human had ever been. And arguably, until Jesus, until the incarnation, no human ever was, and that presence has a luminous quality to it. Yeah, one might say he's a luminous being, but it might be to rip Yoda out of context.
Yeah, a little too on. Yeah, but it's one of my favorite spiritual quotes about Star Wars.
But yeah, he has this encounter with God's presence, and there's a physical manifestation of being in the presence of someone so holy that it's noticeable. Yeah.
Why do I think that he sees God's backside? Where does that come from? Is that in the text? This is Exodus 32, 33, 34.
When he's passing by him. Hide you in the cave or the cleft of the rock. I mean, that's, we almost never use the word cleft anymore, but you know, I'll hide you in the crack of the rock. I'll cover you with my hand. I'll pass by you. And then you can see the back of me. Yeah.
Yeah. He says in Exodus 33, my face shall not be seen. Yeah. You shall see my back. There is this thread throughout the Old Testament in particular about seeking God's face, seeking the face of God, a very common thread in the Psalms, Psalm 24, Psalm 27, Psalm 105. This is one of these common idioms that comes up throughout the Old Testament, to seek the face of God. I was trying to draw the connection before the show, asking you guys that, have you ever heard this notion of seeking God's face, being face to face with God? Any association with this and God's honor, God's glory, and how, of course, God gives us honor, bestows his honor upon us to the extent to where when people see us, they should, to a certain extent, see God in us. Now, obviously, this is where we're going in all of this. I think the way that I've drawn this connection, I've tried to teach this concept to people, is I think in our own culture, we've got a little remnant of this idiom, which is to save face, right? It links the idea of, it doesn't have to do with a person's nose and mouth and eyes and ears as much as their reputation, right? If you're an athlete who has just lost the big game because you missed the big shot, and then you're in the post-game interview, you've got your chance to save face, to defend your honor, or maybe blame a teammate.
It's tacky.
It was actually their fault, in which case you could argue that they have just disgraced themselves more if they did such a thing. Do you think that's the best example of this concept that lingers in our culture, the notion of seeking God's face, the connection between face and the Hebrew word for face and honor, glory, reputation?
Well, Scott's ruminating. I've got a what could be an analogy to that. We all work for people who are in whatever institution we find ourselves in, a hierarchy that is above us in some way, or we've been students, you know. And one of the things that is especially honorable or honoring to you as, say, a student is if you can secure a face-to-face meeting with,
sure, good,
you know, someone who is pretty high up in your school's administration. You know, in grad school, I had the opportunities, you know, numerous occasions to meet with the vice president of our school, given my position as student body president. And yeah, as a student, I had that position. And so I was regularly in contact with, you know, the school's vice president, who then answered directly to the university's president. When I was in my doctoral program, I was nobody. I wasn't there to invest in that community in the same way that I did in seminary. And so I never sought an audience, never had a reason to seek an audience with the president of the seminary, who is who's a very well respected guy in like church missions and, you know, that kind of field. So if you're into missions, then you might know his name. I never had that honor.
Wow.
I never needed to seek that honor. And so maybe that's, yeah, maybe that's another thing about, you know, that kind of face to face contact might be analogous to what we're talking about here. I've stalled long enough for Scott to take the floor.
One thing I was kind of thinking about, and I would try to draw as many of these parallels, and I don't know if this works or not, but would it be analogous to something like when God speaks to different people? He spoke to Moses as a burning bush. Would you consider that to be some sort of mask or another way to communicate without actually being fully there, or when, you know,
yeah,
Joan of Arc heard
absolutely,
you know, had her calling, you know, these things aren't like a face to face, like, okay, you know, I get a Skype call from them or something, you know, it's always through something else. It's always through another vessel, if you will.
Saul was blinded on the road to Damascus.
Scott, that's great. I hadn't considered that before, to think about the burning bush as like a mask, some kind of mediating thing, or like a prophetic voice. You know, God himself doesn't show up to say, hey, here's the deal. He sends a messenger, sends some kind of, you know, representative.
And that degree of mediation, I think, is so important in this whole discussion as we are trying to wrestle with the theology of all of this, which is that to seek the face of God is no small task. And when that phrase comes up in the Bible, it's something that's significant. It's not just like, oh yeah, you know, be on this good Christian journey to do good deeds. We're talking about the fact that the holy God who created the heavens and the earth and the universe, the author of love and life and light, is the one who, when we consider eternity, we can be in the presence of. We can have that audience, this unmediated experience of God. And that's why, of course, we think about Jesus, the Son of God, coming to earth, the Word being flesh and dwelling among us. Jesus tells his disciples, when they say, hey, you know, Jesus, we've been hanging out for 3 years. When are you going to show us the big guy? I think about the conversation with the disciples in John 14, 15, 16. Who is it, Thomas or Philip, that asks that question? Show us the Father, and that'll be enough for us, Jesus. And he says, truly I tell you, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. Yeah. The idea there is, I've been before you this whole time. That's the beauty of all this. This is what it is to see the Father. The same as that conversation. Oh, but start preaching. Now, the same as that conversation in Exodus 34, where Moses asks to see God's glory. And yeah, he sees his backside, passes before him, whatever is going on there. It's obviously enough of a physical encounter to where when he comes down from the mountain, the Hebrews need mediation between themselves and the face of Moses. But more importantly, it's those qualities that he describes to Moses. I am the Lord, merciful, gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. Do you have this whole quote memorized, guys? I'm close, fairly close. To see the face of God is an amazing thing. And it's not just physically about eyes and noses and mouths, right? It's about something more than that. And we then, as disciples, are offered this opportunity to have a new identity, to come face to face with God as we're on this journey in spirituality with the Lord, right? That through God, through Christ, it's made accessible for us to have a new self, a new personhood that's not just a pretender trying to be somebody that they're not. Let's explore this a little bit. I've been preaching through Colossians this year, this summer, and it feels like it's been all year, yeah. Doesn't it, Scott? I've been preaching through Colossians this summer, and I've been really fascinated with this idea of putting on the new self that Paul describes. The old has passed away, the new has come. A person is baptized into Christ, they're buried with Christ, and then they put on Christ, and you're also putting on the new self. In what way does this idea of putting on Christ, putting on new personhood, differ from this kind of Star Warsian idea of masking one's true identity with a cool helmet or with something that's going to fool people, you know, like Kylo Ren, into thinking that you're more intimidating than you really are? What's the difference?
That's a heavy question.
I specialize in heavy questions. What do you hear? What do you attend? One of my Wednesday night classes.
You can zoom me in. Scott, you want first stab at this?
I was hoping you go first, but
okay. I'll talk my way into something coherent to give you time to gather your thoughts. Two of the masks that we have talked the most about, Kylo Ren and Darth Vader's. Those masks appeared to present an identity that was in some way, perhaps in a substantial way, incongruent with reality. Yes, Vader is a powerful, intimidating figure, and his mask presents that. Vader is also broken physically and emotionally, filled with hatred, allowing that to kind of surge him into the heights of the dark side power. Kylo Ren's mask is in many ways very little different from when my 2-year-old puts on his Hulk mask and runs around and says, "Hulk smash."
Right.
And he's 2. He's not giant and green and muscular. Kylo Ren does basically the adult version of that. But then, my son has never, killed whole villages or anything like that. Just in case that needed to be spelled out for anybody. And so sure, seems like, depending on how you want to look at it, from a certain point of view, if you take the masks that we see guys like Vader and Kylo Ren wear, there's something very incongruent with reality, as opposed to what the New Testament is trying to show when we put on the new self, that reality is changing. You are becoming that. This new self is not hiding an identity. You are having a new genuine identity. There seems to be a semblance of reality about it that I think eludes what Vader and Ren might have been trying to do. And again, this is all very highly nuanced, and we could pick all that apart, but I am putting these thoughts together for the first time while also stalling to give Scott
time.
That
was great. I like the idea of being congruous or incongruous with reality. And we as Christians anticipate a new reality, mm-hmm. and participate in the new reality to a certain extent. Now, go ahead, Scott. Did you want to weigh in on this one?
Well, kind of building off a little bit of what Kevin was saying is that sometimes, the mask is projecting what they want and not what they are. And then when you, after you've put on, for lack of it, putting on the Christ, you're like, That is what you're projecting. That is what is. It's not, you're not trying to force another perspective on there. You're it's okay, this is it. This is what I am.
Absolutely. And it's made possible because of the work of Christ. And I'm going to be clear on that in this whole conversation. Obviously, you can make a personal change in your life to say, I've turned over a new leaf. I'm not the person you once knew. You can change your name. I like that episode of The Office where Andy comes back from anger management. And they say, hey, Andy, welcome back. And he says, it's Drew. Is it Drew now? Jim says, yeah, I'm not going to call you that. And you can see him just kind of fume and bite his tongue. It's like, I'm a new me. I can't control your reactions. I can only control what I do. Well, yeah, you can make a turnover a new leaf in a self-help kind of way. But at least personally speaking, talked about Kevin being on a diet here. You know, when I try those self-improvement things apart from reliance on God, dependence on him through prayer, an understanding of the fact that personal change is coming through the Holy Spirit, I always, even if it's a spiritual goal, if I'm not relying on the transformative power of the Spirit, I fall flat on my face 11 times out of every 10, right? But as we think about the transformation that takes place within us, I think the primary text that comes to my mind is 2 Corinthians chapter 3. It's tying together this whole idea of glory, which is seeking the face of God, is pursuing his glory. It's his glory that, of course, is so radiant that even Moses, when he has seen the backside of God, when God has passed by him, just briefly, he cannot be seen full on by the Israelites. It brings together this idea of a very Star Wars-y concept in hope. It also has to do with this transformative power of the Spirit that's offered, made possible for us through Christ. Do one of you guys have this passage pulled up, 2 Corinthians chapter 3?
Yeah, got it right here.
Trying to think about where the good... I just would like to read this whole chapter, but we can't do that. What do you think would be a good starting place?
To maybe verse 16, because there's some previous discussion about Paul comparing how the law is to be used, and to do that conversation justice would eat up a little bit more of our time than maybe necessary. So maybe 2 Corinthians chapter 3 verse 16. 3:16 should be easy for folks to remember.
Perfect. Yeah, all the good Bible verses are 3:16. cut all the others out. That's all you need. And so the point here, of course, is that Moses had this veil over his face after Sinai. That's the imagery that Paul is using here. Go ahead, Kevin. Read this for us.
Yeah, so I'm going to read from a translation called the New Revised Standard Version. It's a pretty good translation that balances sort of, you know, what a text says versus what a text means. And if you've ever had to translate anything from one language to another, you know that those aren't always a one-to-one correspondence. So Paul says, but when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed, referring to the veil of Moses that we talked about earlier. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another, for this comes from the Lord, the Spirit.
Oh, man, I love this passage. Scott, you know Nancy from church? Kevin, you remember that time that I thought that I was calling Nancy and I called you? This is that Nancy that we're talking about?
I was a guy who was really excited. It's like, hey, a random call from Jared. Cool, man.
I said, hey, Nancy. He's like, this is Dr. Kevin Burr.
you're just anyway. My student back then.
Yeah, yeah. not distinguished podcast co-host. The point, of course, is Nancy, every time, just about every Bible class I've ever taught in the 5 years I've been here, at the very end of class, she says, you know what else is a really good Bible verse? 2 Corinthians 3:18. And then she recites it. And it normally ties into whatever we've talked about, but without fail, the end of class, she raises her hand and wants to read 2 Corinthians 3:18, which I don't know that I can divorce this text from from this sweet older woman in our congregation. But you have to ask her, Scott, next time you see her, what's your favorite Bible verse? I guarantee you it's this one. But for good reason, right? What an incredible, powerful passage. How does this tie into what we've been talking about tonight with the significance of these new clothing items we're wearing in our culture? Of course, the cool factor of masks in Star Wars, but then theologically, the idea that we're being transformed from one degree of glory to another, and when it's all said and done, can behold the glory of the Lord with unveiled faces. How does this all tie together?
As we've been talking about masks in Star Wars, we've either stated or implied masks present some kind of identity. You know, especially for Kylo Ren, who wanted a different identity. You know, Din Djarin found a new identity. You know, others wanted to hide, wanted an identity that was anonymous, so they hide behind whatever mask they had. Masks alter an identity, give us a new identity. With the unveiled faces that we see described in Paul's second letter to this church in Greece, we see that there no longer needs to be any degree of pretending, because the reality itself is changing. The reality itself is being transformed.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, we can try to put these false images up to God. Have you ever tried to save face to God in prayer? Like, Lord, I know I did the sin, but and you try to distort the truth. It's we can do that with other people, give them our spin on what really happened. I was really good at doing this with my parents whenever my little brother suddenly was crying and I was in the room with my hands up like, it wasn't me. You know how emotional he can be. He's 10 years younger than me. I normally had done something that had agitated him, but I was good at spinning the truth. Well, that doesn't work with God. God knows who we are. I love, what is it, Psalm 139? Before a word is on my tongue, you know it, O Lord. Is that 139?
Keep going and I'll check.
Before a word is even on my lips, you know it. You form me. Before the foundation of the world, the idea, of course, is that God knows us better than we could possibly ever even know ourselves. But in this passage, we have this idea that we don't need to. I knew I was right there. We don't need to try to pretend to be someone that we're not. And in fact, God embraces us and makes us someone who's better than we could have been on our own. Right. Now, wrapped up in this idea is vulnerability, that we can be truly vulnerable before God. We can be, as Christians, truly vulnerable before one another. There's this degree of mediation between us and pretension that we can drop this veil of, you know, trying to pretend to be someone that we're not, and give each other a realistic view of our sin struggles, but also spur one another on to greater deeds, greater good in being the people of God. I've had friends along the way who sometimes have told me what I didn't want to hear, but was what I needed to hear. And that's this idea of they were a friend I could be truly vulnerable with. There's this idea of new personhood. There's this idea of how Jesus gives us the mediation that Israel was desperate for after Moses' encounter on Sinai, but that we're moving to a point where that mediation is we're participating fully in with one another in the presence of God, alongside the resurrected Christ. That's a beautiful thing to look forward to, especially as we find ourselves in the middle of what's been a dark couple of years in our country. We don't even see each other's faces anymore, hardly out in the public sphere. And it's rare when you find yourself in a situation where you can be truly face-to-face with another person. We're over Zoom. We were just talking about, could we ever, the three of us, be in the same room to record one of these? And it feels like it's far-fetched, but we anticipate a text like this, the fact that in eternity, we could spend 1,000 years, the three of us, just chatting about some even more incredible things than this, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And now Kevin's about to start critiquing my eschatology.
No, I was sitting back. I mean, we're talking about smoking meat earlier, so the marriage
supper. We've gotten to a very different place. Any last thoughts on this one, guys? I've got a little joke I wanted to give before all said and done. Maybe it's got to go in the blooper reel at the end of the episode after we've rolled the credits. Anything else you guys want to throw in that we've overlooked?
Oh, I just had I didn't want to, this might be too much at this point, but do you ever feel that you have to have a certain kind of face being, you know, being a Christian, being out there, saying, oh, I better not let a curse word slip, or better not show an anger, or something like that. Like, you know, you made me think of it when you said, well, you know, when we get together, we can be a little more relaxed and be ourselves. And I don't know if anybody else has ever faced that, like, oh, everybody knows that I'm a Christian, so I have to act a certain way.
Yeah, I think that is one of the really sad things that I think Christians have often missed, which is it can go one of two ways, which is never aim for Christ-like living and just settle for base debauchery and write it all off in the name of forgiveness. Oh, I'm good. I'm covered. Saved by grace. Saved by grace, right, God? Saved by grace. But then on the other side, you know, one of my mentors, one of my best friends, Dr. Devin Swindle at Harding, he tells the story of his preacher in his hometown in Northeast Arkansas who mowed his yard in his suit, his three-piece suit. That he could never let his guard down in the community in any way because he had to put on this suit, right, to show the community that he was perfect. He was the person to look up to. He was the kind of person you should want to be. And I would say the kind of person that I want to be is somebody who is transparent, who's honest, and who's vulnerable, and who shows the world, on the one hand, there is a better way to live. In the communities I'm a part of, I try not to be a complainer. I try to be somebody who uplifts other people rather than tear them down. But I also will say, this is something I'm going through, and I need just as much help as the next guy, right? Kevin, what about you?
I want to give credit to Scott for asking a probing question like that, because there are instances where we do need to take the mask off, and hopefully we have experienced a degree of transformation that when someone sees us, they see. They see Jesus? I mean, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Wow. Well, on that note, it's been a great episode. It's been good to be with you guys again.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. We might have to move to a different record date so that we can get on a more consistent schedule as life has caught up with us. But, hey, I have really enjoyed this, and hopefully you all have as well. We'd like to hear from you. If you want to submit your response, if you want to weigh in on this topic or any other topic, something you'd like for us to leak, give us two really weird things, something from Star Wars, something from the Bible, see if we can connect them. Hey, whatever it is that you would like to contribute, we'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us via email. You can contact us, hyperspacetheology@gmail.com, or on Instagram. Make sure I upload some sort of photo that coordinates with this episode, by the way. Yeah, on Instagram, hyperspace_theology. If you have questions about God, Star Wars, or anything in between, you can reach out and we'll do something about it. Who knows? Maybe even a whole episode. We'll be back in another couple weeks with another episode. God bless.